Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program, Abhi Amenihar, who's CTO and co-founder of Pando, and Mike Mulqueen, who's Executive Principal for Strategy and Innovation at JBF Consulting. And today we're going to talk about AI in Logistics 2025, why the future belongs to the fast movers. So if you're like many logistics executives, you're likely very curious and interested in how AI can improve your logistics operations and deliver business value. But you're also probably, a little bit skeptical or confused about all the noise and hype in the market, today. Therefore, it's not surprising, as we'll discuss in just a moment, that many companies are still in the early awareness stage. That is, they're trying to learn as much as possible to figure out where and how to get started with AI and logistics. So if that's you, you've come to the right place because Pando and JBF Consulting just published a research report titled The State of AI in Logistics 2025, with data and insights they gathered from in-depth interviews with senior supply chain logistics executives across many industries. And today we're going to explore some of those research results and, some of the key takeaways. But I encourage you to download the full report, to get the full story, because there's a lot more in that report that we're going to be able to get to in today's episode. And I'll include the link to download the report in the episode notes. Finally, before we dive into the conversation, just a quick housekeeping note. Since I don't have a producer that can kind of feed me audience questions in real time as I'm talking to Mike and Abhi here, and since I'm not talented enough to, both engage with Mike and Abhi and also, search for questions in the feed there, we're not going to take live Q&A today, but I still encourage you to post your questions in the comments, and Mike and Abhi will respond to them, after the episode. So please do that. So with that, Abhi and Mike, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Adrian. Appreciate you having us.
Hey, Adrian. Thank you for having us. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Abby.
All right. Well, before we kind of, we've got a lot to talk about today, but before we kind of get into the research results and the conversation, for people who might be familiar with you or your respective companies, please introduce yourselves. Briefly tell us a little bit about your companies and your roles there. And let's start with you, Abhi.
Sure. My name is Abhijit. I'm the CTO at Pando. I've been in technology for about 15 years and in the logistics and supply chain space for as old as Pando is, which is 6 years. We build AI agents for logistics in the freight procure to pay cycle across all modes and legs of movement. We help manufacturers, retailers, and distributors automate their logistics operations. We have Fortune 500 customers across North America, Europe, and Asia, across different industry verticals. Could be consumer electronics, automotive, pharma, retail, chemicals, etc. We also made our debut in the Gartner TMS Magic Quadrant for our innovation through AI agents this year. It's an exciting time to be at the intersection of logistics and AI, and my role is primarily to build out the AI strategy at Pando.
Great. Thank you. Mike, you and I go back a long way, but please tell us a little bit about yourself and JBF.
Yeah, so Mike Mulqueen, I'm a consultant at JBF. JBF, we primarily work with large shippers in helping them. In my practice, we help them define what I call the desired end state, as well as do logistics technology selections. So we do a lot of evaluation with various logistics tech providers. I also do a decent amount of work assisting with private equity in due diligence, primarily again in the logistics tech space. And as well as software companies and providing some go-to-market and product management strategy and things like that for on the software space. JBF also does a lot in terms of implementation. We're primarily working, Adrian, with TMS applications, but we also do a lot with yard management, with the entire ecosystem of what I would call logistics, outside of warehouse management. We don't do much in warehouse management. We do a lot with yard management, fleet routing and scheduling, RTTVP applications, that type of area as well. So it's a pleasure to be here and looking forward to the conversation.
Great. Well, I mean, but both of you bring just really a wealth of experience and insight into this industry. So appreciate you both being here, Mike. Like, I'm going to start with you. Like I mentioned in my opening remarks, Pando Pando JBF just published this report, The State of AI and Logistics 2025. It's based on, in-depth interviews you conducted with supply chain logistics executives on this topic. So I guess as a way to kind of get this whole conversation started, I mean, what was the catalyst for doing this research and, why now?
The catalyst, honestly, Adrian. So every darn log tech provider that I've worked with in the last 10 years, within the first four slides, was something about AI ML, right? Artificial intelligence, machine learning. And back, prior to 2022, there was really some interesting stuff around neural networks and deep learning and predictive ETAs and robotics and things like that. But what really blew up? November 22, OpenAI releases ChatGPT, and the generative AI piece has essentially flipped everybody on their head. Everybody could kind of get a sense around what how we were using AI pre-2022. But the generative AI component with ChatGPT and the magic essentially that it enables made people really start thinking. And honestly, Adrian, it went kind of almost from like when it was first released, it was a parlor trick. Oh, I can make a dolphin on the moon juggling or whatever, right? And all of a sudden, then people started figuring out interesting use cases, code development, things that just the overall efficiency that you're able to generate through the generative AI. And then the movement over really, I would say, in the last 12 months to agentic AI. And we'll talk about, kind of how we see that evolution and what the differences are between those different types of AI. But it was time, Adrian. Everybody, this is top of mind. Instead of the first four slides, where before you start seeing AI, now it's slide number one for most log tech providers. And there's a lot of fear, a lot of FUD out there in terms of what's real, what's not real. Logistics people, by their nature, are skeptical, I think, as you mentioned it in the opening remarks here. But this is real stuff, and I think it's time for industry, our industry, logistics space, to really start embracing the capabilities that are out there now.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think, certainly over the past 2 years, you can't go to any industry conference without, I think right now, like if it's not 100%, it's close to 100% of the presentations, no matter what the topic is, has some element of AI as part of the conversation. And I think, the ChatGPT not only was kind of a watershed moment, but it also put AI in the spotlight for the general public as well, right? Because I think that's another aspect of this. I think that's served as a catalyst. I mean, you pick up the Wall Street Journal today, and easily every single day, whether it's in the main section of the paper or the business section of the paper, there is some AI related, story, to it. So it really is, top of mind, not only in the technology realm, but also the business realm, and also in the public as well. And I will get into some of these, why it's accelerated so much in just a moment here. But Abhi, I mean, I think, obviously you're in the front lines of this, as a technology provider in terms of developing AI solutions. I mean, what was your, from Pando's perspective, I mean, what were you hoping to learn from this research, and what questions or hypotheses were you trying to answer or explore?
Yeah, I think a lot of the industry narratives around AI in logistics have been either overly futuristic or to general purpose. And so we wanted some clarity around what the industry sees as feasible. What barriers can AI address? Is it integration complexity? Is it lack of trust? Is there anything that is slowing AI adoption? And if we provide the right infrastructure, the right user experience, and change the mindset a little bit, can these gaps be bridged? Can we move from pilots to real-world deployments much more quicker? It's also a call to action to see, what all of us in technology can build towards more tangible, practical solutions. And that's what we were trying to get out of this report.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point because, I mean, I think, when I look at this report, and again, I will include the link for people to download it. I think and this types of research, we've done our own research on AI as well, and I think we come at it from a similar type of standpoint. Is there's the users of this technology, right? The shippers, the manufacturers, the retailers, et cetera. And they're trying to understand, like I said in my opening remarks, right? What this landscape's all about, trying to separate hype from reality, trying to get, trying to ground this into some practical applications, right? But I think it's also equally valuable, this type of research, for the vendor community, right? To try to understand, what's the perspective of your prospective customers, right? What is it that they're trying to achieve? What are their goals and objectives? What are their concerns? What are the obstacles to implementing? And I think the more you learn about that as well, in terms of the customer voice or the customer perspective, I think that helps the vendor community as well. So I think this type of research that you've done and others have done, I think helps in kind of moving the needle forward. So Mike, let me go back to you. And I think you brought up the launch of ChatGPT in November of 2022. But I think one of the misconceptions in the market is that AI is something completely new, right? That it's only something that's come into the market, in the last 3 years or so. But in reality, I mean, aspects of AI have been around in supply chain logistics for decades, right? Going back to your days in at Manugistics, right? If you think about, optimization, and you think about, rule-based, machine learning and things like that. So in the report, you kind of discussed the evolution of AI, which I thought was very good and helpful in terms of five evolutionary stages. I mean, can you walk us through those stages and where we are today?
So you're dating me in terms of age. Even before Manugistics, I was at a company called UPS Logistics Technology, which is Roadnet, right? Still part of it was actually part of OmniTrax. But anyway, but again, think about that very first stage. Some basic heuristics, nearest neighbor type of heuristics, things like that that can be kind of bucketed into the overall umbrella of AI. And that's another kind of misconception here. We think of AI as one thing, but AI is a lot of different things here. But back then, it was really around automation. In the case of Roadnet, we had heuristics. We would get a bunch of orders in, and we would build them into routes, right? On old desktops running DOS, right? And that was the state of the art back in the late 80s. And honestly, the AI piece, the basic heuristics and things like that, that kind of fall under this AI umbrella, really started in the 50s. So again, kind of we start there. Then we started getting into some more interesting things like predictive, right? And think about just essentially demand planning type of applications that we had. You mentioned Manugistics back in the day. Manugistics, fantastic demand planning applications that would be able to predict demand based on patterns, based on primarily historical information that we would get. Then we start moving to prescriptive, right? And again, from a supply chain perspective. And by the way, I don't think that these are essentially been completely eliminated, because they're certainly for autonomous, right? The very first phase of the AI component, there's still valid use cases where I can just have if-then type of statements, which are essentially what the autonomous was bringing. But the kind of the prescriptive, kind of the third generation, right? So we have autonomous, predictive, prescriptive. That third generation was really, okay, this bad thing's going to happen. What can I do about it? I got five different trucks that are predicted to arrive at this particular facility. That's predicted. Prescriptive would be saying, you know what? I'm going to contact truck A and B based on the contents, and I'm going to say, hey guys, delay that and come 2 hours later, whatever it might be, right? That would be essentially a logistics anecdote around prescriptive. Interesting. All those things were interesting. Generative AI. Again, think of ChatGPT, think of Gemini, think of Claude, think of all of the big LLMs that are out there right now. Now we start getting into something that I think is truly, truly disruptive. Up until that point, I would think that each one, they were very, very important, but they were evolutionary. I think the Gen AI piece has turned everything up to the point where this is revolutionary and truly disruptive. The ability for us to quickly write code, the ability for us to interrogate documents coming in, understand those documents beyond just standard OCR, but AI-based OCR, and then act on those types of things. That is then the evolution from Gen AI to agentic AI. And agentic AI, Gen AI, still think of Gen AI being requiring a prompt. I go to ChatGPT and I type something in, and I get an answer back. Agentic AI is proactive. It does not necessarily require I do anything. Now, again, in its early stages of agentic AI, Adrian, I think we're going to see a lot of guardrails and a lot of manual oversight just to ensure the agentic AI is doing what we want it to do. But that's the next phase, and that's the phase that we're in right now, and that's the truly exciting piece that we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, a lot to unpack there. I mean, the first thing that you brought up, and I think is good, is that all these things build on top of each other in many ways, and the fact that this is not necessarily new, that this has been around for a long time. Because I think one of the big questions, or when we talked about the skepticism, a lot of folks would point to, let's say, like blockchain, right? They'll say, "Oh gosh, blockchain, that was just a few years ago, and it was supposed to be completely revolutionary and transformative." And yes, blockchain is still around. It hasn't disappeared. It's found its use cases, but it wasn't, it's not what the cure for cancer and the cure for supply chain visibility and all this. That was a promise unfulfilled. So some folks are saying, well, how is AI different than something like that? And I think you explained it very well. It's like, this has been happening for a long time, right? And it's building on top of each other. So it's fundamentally different, and I don't want to get into the weeds of that, right? But again, I think that's one important, aspect of this. And I think you brought up some good examples there. So that's going to bring me, to you, Abhi. I mean, can you provide maybe some additional real world, examples to illustrate for logistics professionals what these terms and stages means? Because I mean, some people hear, generative AI, agentic AI, and they're like, I just can't keep track of all these terms that keep coming up. They seems like there's like a, it's like Baskin Robbins, 31 flavors, right? It's like a new flavor of AI coming out every other week. But so I think trying to ground that into some real world examples, I think will be helpful.
Sure. Maybe we'll talk about it in the same order. Mike started with automation, which is typically the earliest stage, focuses on rule-based tasks, such as, your auto tender loads when cost hits a certain threshold, or you move an L1 vendor to an L2 vendor if the truck does not arrive in X hours, for example. These are simple rules. If you look at freight audit, for example, you can set up invoice tolerances of, let's say, anything in the plus or minus 5% range. I'd like to approve it automatically or auto match it. So simple rules that are consistent but rigid. When you move to predictive AI, this is, where we get introduced to the ability to anticipate situations, right? So based on certain shipment characteristics, we can predict that this shipment will be delayed, or the carrier will not accept this shipment, or will delay the shipment. So these are, also maybe think about a GPS system with alerts. So these are, typical predictive analogies. The next natural layer is prescriptive, where, for example, if a carrier, often declines tenders, let's say at month end on specific lanes, then the system starts to sort of deprioritize tenders to this carrier. And this becomes more sort of prescriptive, where you learn from patterns and you adapt future scenarios or shipments to past activities. Generative, like Mike mentioned here, the ability for AI to create new content. And the simplest example is through collaboration and communication, where you respond to carriers or customers' queries automatically. You look at a system, you find the status of an invoice, you respond automatically. You don't need a user to go look at five different systems to pull information and respond to a carrier. You generate shipping documents, generate labels that become generative. Agentic AI, the current frontier where decisions are made autonomously, right? Actions get executed. One of the examples would be, if you take an ocean shipment and the goal of the agent is to reduce detention or demurrage penalties, then the agent would inform the drayage partner that that there is a delay in the ocean shipment and don't arrive at this time, but arrive X hours later. And this helps with controlling demurrage penalties, if you will. Maybe building on a previous example, if a chemical shipper's trucks keeps getting rejected on certain lanes, then the agent automatically tenders to a dedicated fleet instead of going with a previous carrier during those windows. So that, and the goal for such an agent would be to cut rejection rates.
Yeah, I think those are all great examples. I think with the agentic AI, I think that you both mentioned it. I mean, that's kind of the latest evolution. I mean, there's a lot of activity in that area today. And I think Mike and both of you kind of said this in some ways, but I think it's important is that I think the way I see it as well, because we've seen this in the past, one of the big things that I think is going to ultimately accelerate the adoption of this is once companies and users begin to trust the system, right? So there's going to be those guardrails, as you talked about, Mike, is to say, okay, hey, let's run a simulation here. Let's run on certain, let's test it out in some areas, and let's say what I would have done as a human, right? And what did the agent end up doing, right? And then over time, if you see that, hey, the agent would have done is doing the same exact thing that I would have done, that builds up the trust, and then that ultimately that lets you then perhaps broaden the scope of what the agent's going to work on, and so forth. But I think right now, I think that's one of the key things. When people hear this, they say, well, I'm not going to let, some technology just start autonomously start making decisions. So I think that's the mind shift, or I think that's the hurdle, is to kind of build, that layer of trust. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if the research, I can't remember in the report if the research explored that or not, but I think we'll talk about some of the hurdles perhaps, but maybe you can address that comment when we talk about some of the hurdles or some of the things that we talked about in that you talk about in the report. Mike, going back to you, I mean, you wrote in the report, I think in the foreword, that the as a way to kind of summarize, that the study revealed that while enthusiasm for AI is widespread and investment is increasing, in fact, 91% of those surveyed have increased their investments in AI over the past 2 years. The journey from concept to operational reality is still in the early stages for most organizations. So I guess the simple question is, why are most companies still in the early stages? I mean, what's holding them back? And maybe this is where that trust element comes in.
And this also ties back, Adrian, to, I think, probably some nomenclature and jargon, right? That they're as you build out the survey, right? What is AI, right? So a lot of these organizations are truly using the level one, two, and three that Abhi just talked about, right? The ability to do the autonomous, the if-then type of thing that we talked about, right? Or even predictive, or and to some level prescriptive. But I think that as people, as the consumer, which all of these logistics professionals that we interviewed are also consumers that are using AI. As they're using AI and they're seeing all the capabilities, they're going back to their business and they're looking to see, hey, gosh, there's a lot of things that we could be doing here that we're not doing. So I would question essentially the lack of use of AI. They're using AI, but perhaps not the latest, greatest Gen AI or agentic AI, right? So I think that that's something. Also, if I'm the CEO or CFO, is logistics going to be the first place that I use AI? Am I going to be testing this out at logistics, or should I be testing this out for dynamic pricing and sales? Should I be testing this out for other things that potentially could increase net revenue versus logistics? So those would be some of the hurdles. And but the other big piece, Adrian, is it has the generative AI and the agentic AI stuff has only been out a couple of years, and these large organizations do take a lot of time, and they're very thoughtful. Some of them are very thoughtful. Some of them are probably too thoughtful in terms of actually making an investment. Do we have an ROI? As opposed to just, you know what, in the initial stages here, maybe we need the opportunity to simply learn, right? How can this technology work before? And again, I always, when we're putting together a proposal, we always have SMART objectives. What are we trying to get out of this? What's the success criteria? All those different pieces. But I think that the continued investment that everybody and the thoughtful responses that we got around the continuous investment, I think that's the bigger story as opposed to why people aren't farther ahead than they really are, right?
Yeah, you bring up a good point, because I mean, I think a lot of times, I think hopefully a lot of companies have learned from their past mistakes, right? So it's about, shiny, chasing the next new shiny thing, right? And then they end up chasing the new shiny thing without first this, clearly defining, what is the problem they're trying to solve, which key KPIs that they're trying to improve, or whatever it comes down from the CEO, whatever, says, oh, look, our competitors are doing AI, or our competitors are doing RFID, or our competitors are doing blockchain. We need to be doing this. And then, that ends up, kind of, you end up running in circles, wasting a lot of time, energy, resources, et cetera, and not really, accomplishing anything, because you really didn't take that first step and kind of clearly defining the business case, the use case. etc. So I think a lot of companies are in that stage right now. They say, hey, yo, we want to learn as much as possible. Like I said, before we even know where and how to start, because we want to make sure that, we invest intelligently. But at the same time, I think that what's different today is that this is moving so quickly that, you can spend literally, months and years, trying to learn and, be in meetings discussing this and that. And by the time you realize that a year has gone by, you haven't done anything. So it's really trying to find that, that right balance between, yes, being intelligent in terms of, understanding what the technology is, where it makes the most sense within your organization to deliver value, and then, defining the appropriate starting point and learning from there, and just being in this endless loop of, meetings, discussions, meetings, and not, taking any action.
You define the two quintessential use cases that has driven so much skepticism in logistics, right? RFID, 2001, 2, 3, everybody had to have it. But the hardest part, Adrian, was coming up with what's the business value here? Walmart saying, oh, we're going to use RFID and we're going to increase sales because we're going to know when we're out of stock on the shelf at our store. Or we're going to reduce receiving time. Yeah, interesting, but these are edge use cases that are not truly transformative. Same thing with blockchain, right? Really some interesting stuff. I'm a big crypto guy. I love blockchain, right? Complete visibility, one system of truth, distributed ledger, all kinds of cool stuff that you get out of it. But what's the true use case? I think the big fundamental difference in AI is you and I and Abhi, we can all try AI and we can all be doing different things with AI right now on our laptops, right? And that's fundamentally different. And I think being able to take that knowledge that we're learning by ourselves and then kind of go back and look at our business and say, wait a second, if I could do this, if I could generate an email automatically based on a question my babysitter sent to me, I should be able to do very similar things as I'm talking with a carrier or going through a procurement event for rates, right? So I think that this consumer-driven type of thing where it's kind of coming up from the ground up and then getting to the enterprise versus RFID and blockchain, which I think are enterprise-level type things that people, in the end, the emperor didn't have any clothes. And again, there are use cases, and there's certainly still some use cases for these technologies, but they certainly were not transformative like we're seeing right now on the latest generations of AI.
Yeah, no, that's a good differentiator there between AI and some of these earlier other technologies. I mean, one of the things I often hear a lot about, and this is true for any really type of application. I mean, we were talking about this with BI and analytics, for example, or even with transportation management systems, right? It's the whole garbage in, garbage out. Namely, so much depends on the data that you have, right, to really derive the value and data quality. I mean, was that something that came up in the research, or what are your thoughts on the whole data quality aspect of this?
Yeah, I think a lot of talk about data quality being a barrier to adoption of AI. But here's the nuance. I think AI is really good at bettering the quality of data. And this could be sort of figuring out missing values, flagging duplicates, converting from one format to another, correcting spelling mistakes, right? Freight audit is a classic example, and we deal with multiple formats of documents. It could be in emails. You have different sources where you pick up supporting documents. You have approvals coming over emails. You have shipment markers. You have contract terms where you have to look through to match invoice data. And rather than sort of throwing out exceptions, the agent learns to work with ambiguity, and you move the invoice along to a stage where it actually makes sense to take some action. Earlier, you would just look at the invoice. I don't have this field. You reject it, which means you spend a ton of time just getting to the root cause of even processing that invoice, which is why a lot of these large enterprises don't process or don't even look through a lot of the invoices. You're probably looking at sampling invoices and taking taking a call on whether to actually get through all of them or not. So I think when a lot of these logistics leaders say we're not ready, data's too messy. I think the response is generally that's exactly when you start with AI.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's interesting because I from some of the companies that have been the early adopters of this that I've talked to, They've said exactly that, right? So that was one of their main concerns. But one of the key aha moments was that actually this technology actually helps to overcome some of the data quality issues, and helps to at least identify and help them resolve them faster than than in the past. So it's both, you can view data quality as both a limitation to AI, or you can view it as AI being part of the solution to the data quality problem, and it's kind of a different mindset there. So I'll stick with you because I mean one of the other things that the research revealed kind of on the flip side is that 75% of the companies plan to increase their investments in AI significantly over the next 2 years. So what's driving that acceleration?
I think the primary reason could be talent burnout in logistics, if you will. And the more customers I speak to, I feel like the biggest constraint is that the knowledge is proprietary, and it's held by very few people in the organization. And when they move or when they want to change roles, it becomes very hard to sort of transfer that knowledge out. I think everybody realizes that we need to move away from this dependency. With AI, you could sort of inherit that knowledge. Imagine a situation where a logistics user asks an agent for something, he gets a response, and let's say he doesn't like the response because he wants to follow a different process. You nudge the agent, you keep asking more questions, nudge the agent, you sort of start bootstrapping the usage. And the agent sort of uses this as feedback. And as this feedback comes through, you're actually understanding the mindset of the logistics user, right? So I think in some ways, you're looking at alleviating this or removing this dependency, if you will. Also, I think just trust in AI with explainability, being able to articulate the exact reason for why the agent took this decision might help with adoption. I think those couple of reasons.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I think we've done a lot of research, and just in terms of the people side of all this, broadly speaking, there is companies are challenged in finding talent these days, and that's both white collar talent as a and blue collar talent. So we see that in the warehouses, for example, with the acceleration and the drive towards, robotics. And I think there's a kind of a similar type of factor driving this type of technology more in kind of the white collar space, if you will, because there is a relative shortage of talent. And the reality is, if you just look at the demographics, each generation is smaller than the one, than the one before it. So ultimately, the amount, the talent pool out there is getting smaller and smaller over the years. And I think, it's a great point. I mean, I think, it used to be, I remember when I worked, at Motorola and Polaroid and all these other places, there was that one person or two persons. We used to joke that it was job security because if he or she went on vacation, all hell could break loose, right? Or if they moved away or left the company because they had so much institutional knowledge in their head and they were like kind of the only ones that knew how to do X, right? And if that person were to leave or retire or whatever, at best, you kind of took a step down and then you had to ramp up again and training somebody new and so forth to kind of even just come up to speed. And I think this is, a way to kind of embed that institutional knowledge, and standardize it, productize it, if you will, across the organization. So Mike, just building off of that, I mean, one of the questions that I'm sure you get a lot and I get a lot is by supply chain logistics executives is that, where is AI working today, right? So it's like let's get out of this, all these terms and labels and just show me where is it working today. And in the report, you actually highlight seven real world use cases, which I thought were very interesting, and where AI agents, that since we've been talking about agents, are actually gaining traction. Can you walk us through some of those use cases? So maybe Mike, you go first, and then Abhi, you can add to that.
Yeah, sure. So, and some of the ones, again, they've been around for a little bit, Adrian, right? So, You think about P44 and four kites, right? Their big thing was predictive ETAs using AI, right? So that capability's been there for a while. And again, a lot of the initial stuff was all around truck, and it's not that difficult to do a predictive ETA with a truck because it's point to point. But when you start getting into network level transportation, going through different consolidation, deconsolidation points like ports or crossdocks or an LTL or a parcel network, terminal network, it becomes a lot more complex, right? So that's kind of like the quintessential use case, and that's the kind of an eye roll at this point, right? That was really hot in 2016, 17, but okay, yeah, we get it, we got that, right? We have seen some really cool stuff around, for instance, parcel, right? So parcel and using historical information to downgrade service levels when the historical information shows that for certain types of shipments or certain types of parcel movements on certain lanes, UPS might be telling you it's 3 days or FedEx might be saying it's 3 days. But we know it's 89% chance it's going to be 2 days. And if you ship it on a Wednesday, there's a 97% chance it's going to be 2 days. Let's not upgrade the service. Let's use that, right? So some really cool, interesting stuff around machine learning in transit times. Same thing could happen on the LTL side. Instead of relying on Carrier Connect from SMC, we're actually going to use historical information based on our own network and come up. And then, from a decision support. So Abhi mentioned a really good use case, and this was something when I was we were going through a vendor selection, and one of the use cases that they had, Adrian, it was very complex, right? Because it wasn't just transportation. I'm a transportation guy, and it wasn't just transportation, right? So the use case was at the end of the quarter, they're trying to maximize sales obviously for their financials, right? And they would be shipping containers into a port. They also have sales information in their ERP system that says this is the SKUs that are going to sell immediately that I have an outstanding order for. So the ability for an agentic AI application to look first off at overall port congestion, look at individual terminals, look at free days that I have from the steamship lines before I'm going to get hit with demurrage costs, look at the individual SKUs within the container, and then make a determination based on all those different factors as to which container I need to move to the distribution center to fulfill an order before the end of the quarter. Those are things that a TMS can't do. Agentic AI, the ability for an agentic AI solution to go out and look at the entire ecosystem based on the rules that I define. Again, I don't want necessarily Pando or some other TMS provider to define just the agentic AI set that I have to deal with. I want to be able to build my own agents based on my own specific needs. But that capability, Adrian, I could never do that at any of the TMS companies that I used to work for in the past. But those are the really, really interesting use cases that we're seeing out there. That again, it's different flavors of AI. Some of it's basically just machine learning. Some of it is agentic AI. Some of it is the ability for the agents to go out to external sites, like a port, like an individual terminal, like the sailing schedules for ocean carriers, right? That may not reside within the TMS application. Use that information that they can then come up with an optimal decision. That's game changing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, anyone listening can say, well, I can, why can't a person do that, right? I can, and yes, a person could do that, right? They can try to go hit multiple, but it would probably take them a few hours, to number one, try to get all that data that they need, and then number two, to be able to like even just do that analysis, right? So, forget about it if they're trying to use an Excel spreadsheet, some kind of macro formula to try to do it, right? But, they may have to, they definitely would have to use something more intelligent than that, but by the time they come up with the answer, at best it's been a few hours, right? An agent can literally do this, let's say, in a fraction of that time, and I think that's the real, game changer here. So it's a lot of it is not so much that, yes, if you had the different portals and access to the systems, you could probably go and try to get that data, but like anything else, it's going to take you, an X factor of time more than an agent will, it's going to take an AI agent.
That's spot on, Adrian. And again, my clients are doing this, right? They're trying to do this right now, but it is an extremely inefficient process where I have to go to all these different sources, right? That's essentially, and the agent, again, for the most part, right now in 2025, The agents that we're dealing with right now are not completely autonomous, right? They're going to require some level of manual input. And one thing, I do like in terms of I just got a demonstration recently, the Panda solution and the auditability, how the system's coming up with various solutions. Why did you pick container seven? Within the Panda solution, you have the ability to go back and audit and understand exactly what the AI was thinking about when it said move container seven versus container eight, right? And then also, if it did it wrong, the ability to go back and, as Abhi said, nudge the system, train the system. This is the criteria that I really needed to look at, right? So again, you can do these things if you want to spend hours and hours and hours of manual time. And this goes back to kind of like one of the fundamental things that we're thinking about is the overall talent of labor. Should they be doing things like this? Should they be doing redundant kind of semi-mundane type of tasks that are taking 18, 20 hours of a week? Or can that person have an agent, an assistant, essentially do a lot of this stuff for them, right?
Yeah, and that's a great point. And I love the auditability aspect of it because, going back to what we were talking about before, I mean, that's what really drives trust in the system, right? So because I think if you view, AI as a black box, right? Or if it's treated as a black box, which is like you don't really understand what's going on in that black box, that's gonna impede gaining trust in the system because you don't know what's going on in there, right? But if you're able to have visibility to how the decision was made and what went into it, and audit it, as you said, and then maybe be able to tweak it and help improve it. I think that's what ultimately helps build that, that trust. Abhi, any other use cases that you want to, add to that to kind of help ground this, or any unexpected use cases or comments that you heard from the executives that you interviewed?
Yeah, I think we've seen a lot of traction in both procurement and, like mentioned, Mike mentioned, in the freight audit space. A lot of customers are using agents to auto create events. For example, if you go and ask, when should I create an event? The agent sometimes says, hey, for the last 2 weeks, you've been consistently paying 15% above market. Now's a good time to go create an event. Right. And, if you look at freight audit, multiple different agents come to mind, but generally, look at contract terms and being able to convert that to mathematical formulae that can then be used for costing and audit and match is one use case that we've seen gain significant traction. Supplier collaboration is another, and a lot of customers recently, are doing away with the supplier portal because of the supplier collaboration agent, where you can just send an ASN or send a booking report to an email, and all the actions downstream get automated, which were previously done with a set of rules and a portal and, edits and modifications by the supplier. But then the shipper used to take and, input that into another system like an ERP, which then downstream flows into a TMS. We've taken out the need for a lot of these steps that an agent can take decisions on. Few interesting unexpected use cases would be, we built an agent that we asked to analyze accessorial charges, right? And we said, hey, I see so many accessorial charges. What's going on? It typically went down the path of, hey, your dominant accessorial charges is escort. You pay a lot on, bunker charges and all of that. But as we sort of kept, asking more questions and drilling down, it said, hey, you have an accessorial charge called HAZ, and you have something else called DG, and then you have something else called dangerous goods. Aren't they all the same thing? Wouldn't you want to standardize them? And so the customer then actually went down the path of normalizing accessorials, codes, if you will, right? And you're actually trying to clean up the system, if you will. You end up with 500 different charge codes. But this insight wasn't expected from an agent. But you sometimes get interesting insights that then take you into a different hole. Now,
Yeah.
another interesting use case with another automotive customer was that. We were saying, hey, how do we negotiate for charges? Think about detention charge. I'm paying too much in detention penalties. Can you suggest counter offers across carriers so I can negotiate better? And the agent actually came back with something interesting. It said, "Hey, I mean, give me past shipments," and we gave that as the data set. It said, "Hey, actually, the detention typically kicks in at 3 hours, but you consistently clock 4 to 6 hours. So instead of actually, negotiating on the rate, why don't you make that 6 hours?" And so, sort of interesting nuances that come out of agents when you actually, provide it a goal, and then it sort of looks at, everything around all the variables attached to provide a response.
Those are some great examples, from both of you. I mean, the accessorial charges piece, I think, is a good example of what we were talking about before in terms of just data quality, right? So, I mean, here you have three codes that are essentially the same thing, but they're basically creating a lot of redundant data, if you will, in your data sets, right? So if you can just standardize on that, on one, right, it just immediately just cleans up your data that much better. And as you were talking about, I was just thinking about, how we use AI agents right now, whether we know it or not, in just our own personal lives. And it just occurred to me earlier this morning, I got an alert from Alexa, right? So the Amazon, and I asked Alexa, "What's my notification?" She said, "Well, based on your order history, it's probably about time for you to reorder, your honey stingers." And honey stingers is this snack that I use when I go out for cycling, there's an agent, right, that knows how often I order these, and it's telling me, "Hey, it's probably about time that you reorder them. And guess what? The price now is 6% less than it was the last time you ordered. Would you like me to put it in your order cart, or order, or if you want me to automatically order it, just say order now." So again, even in our personal lives, we don't realize it, but there's an agent right there, right? That's making, and that, you just apply that same model to like some of the examples you were talking about to say, hey, we noticed that your on-time delivery is going down in this lane, or tender rejection rates are going up in this lane. It might be time to do a mini bid. Right? Would you like me to set up a mini bid on this lane with your preferred carriers or a specific carrier base that you might have already predefined? So I think it's not that big of a stretch from what we're already experiencing in our, everyday lives to, to applying the same thing in the technology realm. And I guess that brings me to my next question. I'll stick with you, Abby. I mean, if I'm a logistics executive and I need to build the business case, right, for AI and logistics, I mean, what are the key metrics that I should focus on? I mean, is it just about, I mean, whenever we talk about logistics, cost is always king, and always seems to be king. Is it just about cost?
I think a lot of the forward-looking logistics leaders look at a couple of things. It could be sort of the quality of decisions that an agent can take and the improvement in agility, if you will. So you move from did we save money to how fast can we simulate and validate different options. For example, I mean, let's say an agent called out that 60% of customs delays, were tied to a specific HS code misinterpretation, right? Now, this is an insight that, typically you would not look for manually, right? But this helps with, agility. You quickly, you reduce the customs clearance timing from, let's say, 2 weeks to a week and or 2 days, and it's a massive shift in agility. And suddenly, sort of this whole agility becomes P&L protection, if you will. Also, maybe looking at risk mitigation as revenue preservation, right? And you sort of start tracking or looking at it differently, right? This is risk mitigation is no longer a soft value. It becomes measurable. You start tracking these things. Track AI prevented losses as a separate KPI, which you typically would not, because avoiding a disruption deserves as much credit as rate negotiations, which everybody talks about, because rate negotiation directly means savings. But now you start looking at other metrics as well. I think the third one is, generally resilience and how fast you can recover from, unforeseen circumstances, exceptions in the system. How quickly can you recover and make decisions and move to an alternative?
Yeah, those are all great examples. I mean, I think, the bottom line, and I think I've seen this as well with the companies I've spoken with, is that cost is always going to be important because that always gets the attention of the CEO, the CFO, right? So that has to be, that's like a no-brainer, right? But the perhaps the bigger value is goes beyond that. If you really can look at metrics that align with risk, with resilience, with top line growth, with customer satisfaction, customer retention, market share growth. I mean, these are all things that are ultimately drive the overall success for a company. And these things are measurable, right? And you can track on them. I think that provides a just a more powerful business case. And I think that leads to my question to you, Mike, because I think that's part of the answer. I mean, if my CEO and CFO are skeptical about the ROI of AI, I mean, how can I change their mind? I mean, how should I prepare for that conversation?
Yeah. So, and honestly, I think that some of the results that we've seen, and not just from this survey, but from others, are it's almost inversed. The CEO and CFO are oftentimes the biggest cheerleaders because oftentimes they don't understand the overall complexity that is truly required in actually doing this, right? In terms of selling this to a CEO or CFO, I think you do kind of from our perspective on the logistics side, you do need to be able to provide specific benefits. As we saw in the interviews, there was a lot about ROI. And typically for us, it is going to be around cost minimization. So coming up and doing a relatively small but very structured and relatively narrow proof of concept that provides results not in 6 months or 9 months or 12 months that we oftentimes see, but with an MVP that can show results in 2 or 3 months, that would get people's attention. The other thing, who knows the most about AI? And again, not that AI and the agentic AI, not that we're positioning this as a way to reduce labor, but in the end, that's what's happening. If you go back and you take a look at what Amazon has been doing, what Meta is doing, what Google did, IBM just released 8,000 people from their HR group, replacing them with agentic AI, with AI agents, right? So this is happening. And our goal, again, is not necessarily to recommend the elimination of people, but to raise people up to be doing more important tasks than what they're currently doing. But if I'm trying to sell this to a CFO or a CEO, there has to be a return on investment. There has to be something. And again, the return on investment could be simply, we're going to show increased efficiency that ultimately we're going to then infer increased productivity will increase our margins, things like that. But there does need to be some type of quantitative way. And we love really quick, really narrow proof of concepts that can show the capability. One other thing, Adrian, that we've seen as part of the analysis, the people that are at the forefront are not being caught by the people that are behind. The people at the forefront are investing more and more into this, right? So they're just seeing exponential growth while the laggards are not doing anything or investing very, very little, which shows to me that the proof of concepts and the initial foray into AI that these pioneers are dealing with are showing true results that they're having more and more investment going into their AI initiatives. So long-winded answer, but we do need to be able to show some type of cost benefit in creating a proof of concept or an MVP that has very easy and measurable success criteria and showing that we're hitting that success criteria. That's what's going to turn a CEO or CFO's head.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, I think, and this has been true for a long time in other areas as well, right? I mean, I think you want to, number one, minimize the risk involved with any kind of deployment, right? So, I mean, I think if you smartly scope something that's, limited time, limited resources, limited cost, you're able to show, the proof is always in the pudding, right? You're able to show success. As the saying goes, success builds upon success. The other point that you raised, kind of going back to the title of our episode today is, why it's important to move faster is, I remember going back 10, 15, 20 years, and I would talk to companies that were historically kind of the laggards, right? I mean, you're always going to have the early adopters, and they're relatively small folks, and they're willing to take some of the bigger risks, and they've got the resources and the money and all that to try to be, ahead of the pack in all fronts. But a lot of companies that tend to be a little bit more conservative, if you will. And then you've got the laggards to say, I'm just going to wait for everybody to figure things out, and then I'll come around 2, 3 years later. I think the unfortunate thing here, as you just said, is that that's a very risky strategy these days to be a complete laggard, right? Yes, you could be a little bit conservative, but if you're a complete laggard, the fact is, if you're already a year or 2 or 3 behind, you're really not going to catch up because this is accelerating so quickly that the pace of the technology evolving is quick, and the rate at which companies are deploying this is also quick too. So it's a race that you've already lost before you even get to the to the starting line. So let's talk about the technology a little bit, kind of shifting gears, Mike. And I'll ask this of you, since again, in your role, you work not only with shippers, but you also get to evaluate a lot of technology vendors and solutions. I mean, how would you characterize the current state of AI and logistics software applications, and what AI capabilities? And we've kind of already touched upon many of these already, but if there's others that you want to bring up. I mean, what kind of AI capabilities in use today by companies excite you the most?
Maybe I'll start with the ones that excite me the least, right?
That's a good way. Yeah, okay, let's do that.
And what honestly we see, Adrian, is almost like a kind of a sandwich, right? The earliest or the latest companies to come out, right? The pandas of the world. The companies have only been out 5 or 6 years that built their application with this foundation of AI. Right, they had an AI first mentality when they started building out their application. We've seen some other software providers that had same thing. These early companies, especially with the Gen AI stuff and the ability to build code really really quickly, to build MVPs really really quickly, we've seen some really great stuff there. We see the top level guys. You see the SAPs and the Oracles of the world. Those guys, they just have huge deep pockets and they see what's coming, right? And they're actively investing in AI as well. I would say that they're, because of the legacy nature of their applications, they're a little bit farther behind. They're really good with chatbots, virtual assistants that can help, a lot of natural language processing to SQL type of logic, right? Where I can ask a question and it essentially converts it into SQL and then returns a response back to me. But these guys, you have to expect that with their deep pockets, they'll be able to catch up. It's the mid-level guys that I'm really most concerned about right now. Those guys that have been around for, legacy applications that have been around for 10 or 15 years that just do not have the deep pockets, to re-architect their application to be able to truly take advantage of AI. So that's kind of the way that I'm kind of seeing the market. Like the early guys, the guys with 10 people, and Panda's got a lot of people, a lot of the smaller guys that have just built their applications over the last few years, some really, really cool, interesting stuff, as well as then the enterprise level software providers.
Mike, what are you seeing at the RFPs, in terms of both sides?
So this is a fundamental difference. So we've been doing RFPs for forever, right? At JBF, right? And over the last 2 or 3 years, we have really now started focusing on questioning the vendors in terms of their AI capabilities, right? And a basic question we started to ask is, if I run the exact same order set today that I ran yesterday, is your system going to do anything different? And if it's not, they're not doing machine learning. It's a deterministic application that's essentially doing the level one AI piece, right? The kind of rules-based heuristics. But if there is this feedback loop that starts making my application smarter, and you know what? I can't tender to Swift on a Tuesday because 47% of the time on this particular lane, they don't accept. The rest of the week, they're awesome. But that type of thing, those are really interesting questions. Natural language processing, this sells like crazy with our customers, because Adrian, historically that the TMS system has been a gold mine of data, but it's been ridiculously difficult to get information out. So people have built their BI solutions on top of the TMS applications, but it requires me to create a ticket with my IT organization to actually then go out and build, or I have to call up the vendor and have them build it for me. What has really resonated with our clients is the ability to ask, what's my freight spend over the last 3 months? How much I give in truckload versus LTL? How much has gone intermodal? What's that compared to last year? The ability to use natural language processing to be able to extract that information out. And then what I like even better is the prescriptive side. every Monday, I want to generate a report that I created through natural language processing that gives me all the opportunities. You can convert these guys to intermodal. These are the seven lanes you're paying above market on right now. Would you like to actually create a procurement event? Those are the things that really, really excite me. And getting people, I'm always amazed at the intelligence of the load planners that I work with at these large shippers. And the tasks that they're doing are so far below their intelligence. And using agentic AI to be able to cover those mundane, repetitive tasks, and have those people then raise up and start looking, oh my God, these are some additional opportunities that perhaps I found myself or perhaps my AI partner found for me. Those are the exciting areas that we're seeing.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, I mean, it's funny, you've got these MIT trained logistics professionals like you, Mike, and maybe even masters and PhDs, right, doing some mundane tasks when they can be doing some much more higher level, sophisticated things with their valuable time. That's great. I love kind of what excites you the most. I think you're right about the state of the market. I see that as well. I think that's always why, whenever that someone asks me, that there's a new, TMS vendor that's launched or a new pick the market. It's like, why is there a new, do we need another TMS vendor or do we need another? Well, the answer is yes, right? Because every, because the state of technology changes so relatively quickly, especially over the past few years with AI, that, those companies that are coming to market today, within the last 5 years or so, they've come at it, with a clean slate, and they can come in with these AI first mentality, and they can do things much more cost effectively, much more quickly, much more innovatively that, some of the other legacy folks, it just makes it more difficult for them to do just because they've got the constraints of, the architectures or what they've built in the past. Obviously, I mean, kind of similar question to you. I mean, but from a prospective customer's, standpoint. I mean, if I'm evaluating AI solutions today for logistics applications, I mean, what key capabilities should I look for? I mean, what questions should I be asking?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's basically everything that Pando's working on. Yeah, I think I'd start with maybe the ability to gather information from all of the diverse sources across the entire supply chain. Could be ERPs, warehouse management systems, TMSs, sensors, customer portals, emails, support documents, invoices, weather forecasts, fuels. Could be any data. Be able to sort of provide, have a unified substrate of data on which we can build AI agents. The second would be, once you've done this, and we talk about this a lot, is to sort of, understand all of the causal relationships, not just the statistical ones. And this needs logistics depth, right? And this is what creates the trust. Or a lot of the logistics users are apprehensive because, they have a lot of knowledge that, how can an agent already have all of the knowledge that, I've been doing for years, right? So try and figure out the causal relationships, if you will. I'd also look for explainability and trust, the auditability that Mike spoke about, and we try and sort of incorporate that into every decision that an agent makes. Fourth, again, is something, that will give confidence to a lot of the logistics users is if I can take the inputs from them, the nudges from them, and use that as feedback to improve the agents over time. I'd also always like to see a demo of the agents with my own data. Right. And how quickly can you do that? Right. If it's going to take the same amount of time, then it's not as useful, right? If I can give you the data in an hour, you show me back, give me insights about my own organization to me, then, I can understand it better, right? And typically, demos used to, show data that is, mock or, different kinds of, customer data or industry data, but you truly understand what's going on when you see your own data, and that's when you appreciate the power of the agents.
No, a lot of great points there. A lot of great factors to, to consider. I just want to make a quick point here. We're going to be running a little bit over time, but I've got a couple of more questions for Mike and Abby. So hopefully you can hang on. I also want to remind you that to ask your questions. So we've covered a lot of ground so far, but post your comments or your questions. And like I said, we won't be taking them live, but both Mike and Abby will be able to respond to them, after the episode. So Mike, I'll go to you first, and then Abby, you can add your points. I mean, looking ahead to 2026 and beyond, I mean, and you already kind of touched upon this already in terms of what excites you, but what excites you, I guess, if you had to pick one thing about the future of AI and logistics? And we talked about the in the report, you talk about the five stages. I mean, what does the next stage of evolution look like?
This ties back, and I wasn't sure when this was going to happen or why this was going to happen, or it wasn't even tied necessarily to AI. But with TMS applications, I've kind of long used the term TMS aware, right? So TMS is historically back in the olden days, very myopic, right? I would get an order feed into the TMS application. The TMS knew what it knew. It knew these are my rates. These are my carriers. This is my transit time information. It was very kind of a lockdown system, very internal, and that myopic nature has kind of always been kind of at the a limiting ability in terms of the TMS to be able to truly add what I would call holistic logistics value, right? So with the AI agents and the ability for us to now have my TMS system look not just within the data schema of the TMS, but now start to look out and look at ordering patterns, look at inventory, look at what's happening in the particular DC from a labor perspective and a capacity perspective, what's happening with my suppliers and my customers, right? All those internal factors, plus then the external factors, right? Benchmark information on the truckload side, what's actually happening? I want to integrate with Zenata for ocean benchmark information. I want to understand port congestion at different facilities or rail yard congestion or what's happening in the world from there's a cyclone in the Pacific that's going to be hitting wherever it's going to be hitting, the Philippines. What are the implications of those things, right? One of the things that actually came out in the report that I thought was really, really interesting is the resilience piece, right? Right. So we always talk about black swan events and how do you react to a black swan event? Okay, well, reacting to a black swan event is too late because at that point, everybody's reacting to the black swan event. Are there patterns? Are there indicators that are probably very faint? But if the AI can start seeing these indicators ahead of time, 9 months ahead of time, I want to know the ILWU contract on the West Coast ports is going to expire. Maybe we should start thinking about shipping in advance or shipping to the East Coast or shipping to the Gulf, things like that. Right. So what excites me the most, Adrian, and AI, I think, is finally the catalyst that's going to support this, is this TMS aware concept, aware of all of my logistics systems within the enterprise, as well as transportation is just naturally very external, right? There's things happening. There's impacts, geopolitical impacts. There's Strait of Hormuz impacts. There are Panama Canal impacts with the drought, all these different pieces, right? How do I take all of that information and then use that the way that a transportation planner would, right? Historically, the information has been in the TMS, but the guy knows, hey, oh gosh, the transit time on the West Coast port or the Asia to West Coast trade lane is now 36 days from the time I actually order till the time I actually receive it, right? My agent should know that for me, and we should be able to develop plans appropriately around that. So that's the biggest thing, Adrian, for me. It is finally this moving and breaking out of this myopic TMS application into pure logistics that are aware not just of internal other systems that are peripheral to TMS, but also what's happening from a macro perspective.
Yeah, I love that. So kind of I love that phrase, myopic TMS, right? So it's putting better glasses on that TMS, if you will. More visible. We talk a lot about visibility, but really having broadening the access of data and information that can drive more intelligent and faster, the decisions. Abhi, what about you? What excites you about 2026 and beyond?
Yeah, Aiden, you mentioned hyper stingers. I think we'll see AI agents being, hyper personalized, where it understands customer preferences, preferred delivery windows, specific drop-off instructions. I definitely think we'll move there. It'll also be interesting to see if there will be emergence of specialized agents, like, do you need a customs clearance agent? Do you need a fleet maintenance agent? It'll be interesting to see if we go that direction. I also think AI teams will be part of every logistics organization. We're also seeing that a lot of us can now code. And imagine a world where logistics leaders can talk their processes, and the AI teams can then interpret them and deliver on those goals. I think we'll, soon see that. For example, if they say, "Hey, I want carbon emissions to be a, part of every decision," and then that's it. The agent then picks up and looks at every place where, sustainability needs to be a factor and starts incorporating it. I think another eventuality that, we speak about a lot is you might not need to go through 10 screens to complete a transaction. Probably just do it from your own workspace channel. It could be Teams, it could be Slack, it could be emails, where a lot of the use cases could get done. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, no, I think those are all great. I think, we'll be able to just talk to our TMS, right? Talk to our like we do with Alexa, with these other, right? So the user interface and the user experience is going to be, I think, much different moving forward, than it is today. And obviously, based on what you said, we all become coders, right? Or we all are could be able to create these agents ourselves. So, Mike brought up, having to, submit tickets to IT and then having to wait weeks, months, or never for something to be done. Where now, you can be master of your own destiny, if you will, within the organization, and really be able to enable some of these capabilities, within the logistics team, itself. So as a way to wrap up, Abhi, I'll start with you, and Mike, you'll get the last word, for today here. I mean, based on the learnings from the research and you work with clients, I mean, what actions should, companies that are still in that early awareness and value discovery stage, which was again the majority of the folks that you surveyed in the research, what action should they take to move up the maturity adoption curve? I mean, and any mistakes that that they should avoid?
Yeah, I think really depends on the use cases, and some of the use cases don't really have to go through all the layers of the maturity curve. For example, anything to do with data entry, emails, document generation, these are prime candidates for, rising up the maturity curve and going to the last stage directly. But I'd go back to first principles. I'd say, identify and prioritize the burning pain points, focus on them, start small with pilot projects, quickly. Look for demos or pilots that can give you insights about a specific area in your supply chain. Maybe even build internal AI champions that can actually drive agility on adoption. Some of the mistakes, I think, aiming for big bang deployments and hoping AI will work wonders. Waiting for the data to be perfect, I think, is a common misconception. Over-indexing on cost savings, we spoke about this. Looking at AI's value in revenue protection and agility would help.
Great, Mike. Anything to add to that? I think that's a great list,
No,
Abhi.
yeah, it's a great list. The one thing I would do is, first off, your log tech partners, your supply chain partners that you're using right now, and maybe you have some, maybe you don't, but if you do have a TMS provider or anybody that's part of the logistics tech ecosystem, as you should probably be doing QBRs with them, talk to them about what their AI strategy is. Talk to them about their investment in AI and their competency in AI. Right? Do they truly do they believe that this is a disruptive technology that they're going to invest a lot of dollars in and revamp their applications or continue to add in AI capabilities, or do they think it's blockchain 2.0? Right? So that would be and then also as you're going out, if you decide to go out to market and look for a TMS application, make AI be a very important component of your evaluation. How do they have their own LLM, right? Do they have natural language processing? Do they have machine learning? If I ran the same the example I gave earlier, right? If I run orders through tomorrow, will they look the exact same as today? Or will the system have machine learning built in to start modifying the solution over time, right? So again, first off, talk with your providers, understand what their strategies are, and make sure that they're aligned with yours. And then I completely agree with what Avi said in terms of a proof of concept. Try to keep it narrow. Try to keep, define what the objectives are. What are we trying to get out of this, and define the success criteria, and then evaluate after you're done and figure out. What we're seeing is people that actually do that then are throwing more money at AI. They're investing more deeply into this, as opposed to saying, you know what, this isn't for me. I'm going to stop moving forward. And the last thing I'm going to I'll just echo what Abhi said about the data. Don't use data as an excuse for not doing anything. Oh, our data isn't clean. Well, if your data isn't clean, all of your legacy systems aren't working either, right? Your TMS work still requires clean data. So use this as an opportunity as opposed to an excuse for not moving forward. Maybe your very first proof of concept is let's analyze all of our data and clean it, right? So this is it's a burgeoning space. It's a really interesting space. Adrian, I started in 89 doing a logistics tech work, right? This is the most disruptive thing that we've seen, that I've seen in my career. The biggest opportunities out there. I definitely recommend for my shipper clients to truly embrace this tech.
Well, gosh, great advice, from both of you, Abhi, Mike. I mean, again, thank you both for making, time to be with us today. I mean, we went over a little bit of time, but we definitely, covered a lot of ground on the state of AI in logistics. I mean, we could probably talk for for another 2 hours, but unfortunately, we're out of time. But both of you provided some great insights and advice to our audience. So again, thank you both.
Thanks,
Thank
Adrian.
you very much.
And
Thank you.
I want to thank those of you that joined us. If you haven't already, please remember to post your questions for Abhi and Mike. And even if you're watching this episode on demand, you can also post your questions after the fact. Both Abhi and Mike will respond to your questions via the discussion thread. Again, thank you for joining us, and look forward to seeing you in future episodes of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.